Welcome to the Swedish Junior Hockey Podcast. My name is Jacob Dahlin, your host. Today, we're going to do a little bit of a different episode. First time without a guest. And instead, what we're going to do is do a little bit of an educational moment about the U.S. and Canadian junior systems and the different leagues utilizing elite prospects. So hopefully, this will be fun to do.
This episode is brought to you by Scandlux, your home for Scandinavian luxury products for the U.S. market. You can find us at scandlux.com.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen for those who are watching this via YouTube, and I'll try to make this as much as educational as I can as well for those that are listening via just the regular podcast. So let me see here if I can share screen two. There we go. So what I have open, Elite Prospects, of course, this is the paid version, which I think is like $12 a month that we pay, that gives you the ability to look at a lot more things within Elite Prospects than the free version. Free version is great, but I use this pretty much every day. So what I thought we'd do today is look at the different junior leagues in North Carolina. I mean, not North Carolina. I live in North Carolina, but in the U.S. And then look at the Canadian. And a lot of people have been asking me questions about, well, what is tier one versus tier two versus tier three? What are the differences? What are the similarities? How do they compare? And versus, for example, when we talk in Sweden, we have J20 National, we have J20 Region, you have J20 Division One. And the only differences within each region is within each level is going to be the regions, the geographical regions that we're in. So let's look at I think there is a juniors. If I'm pulling up here, let's look at tier one leagues in the U.S. So tier one is going to be the USHL, United States Hockey League, which is a USA Hockey sanctioned program. And if you are looking at the screen now, and if you want to look at it later on Elite Prospects, when you type in the search bar USHL, up comes a total of, there are 16 teams. And primarily these are going to be up around the central, around the Great Lakes area. And we have teams like Cedar Rapids, Chicago Steel, Des Moines, which is in Iowa, Dubuque, Fargo, Green Bay, Lincoln, Madison. All these are kind of in the Midwest area. And then you get in the Illinois, of course, Omaha, which is in Nebraska, Sioux City, Sioux Falls, Tri-City Storms. And here's the little unique one, USNDTP Juniors, which is the United States National Development Team Program. And of course, if we, and then we have Waterloo and Youngstown that are on the East Coast. I think that Waterloo's in the Midwest, but Youngstown is on the East Coast. Not a lot of teams. Top players in the U.S. Plays there. Two divisions. You have Eastern and Western. And if I'm looking at the stats for this year, wow, why is the USNTDP not competitive? Well, if we, let's click on the differences here. Dubuque, which is has a general manager from Sweden, Kalle. And if we look at Kalle Larsson is the general manager for that team. And if we look at the roster here, normally there's three or four Swedes on there. This year there's only two, Erik Paulsson and Kevin Reidler, which is a goalie. Three draft picks, of course. We look at Ottawa, Boston has one, and St. Louis has one. But if we look at the age group in the USHL, typically this is going to be the oldest person, and this is the current roster, which is still going on. The 23-24 season is 2003 birth year is the oldest, and the youngest player on here on the roster is 2006. Okay, they're in the top of the standings as of right now. So let's go back to the USNTDP and why are they not competitive? They're the top in the top players really in the country. But what's the big difference here? It is the oldest player is a 2006 birth year. And there's a lot of players on this list, but it's really 06s and 07s are on this roster. So that's the big difference within the tier one between US NTDP and the leading teams. This is much, much younger. So they're competing with 3 and 4 year older players. But in reality, these guys are going to be the draft picks, as you can see in the drafts. So let's go out and look at. I'm trying to find there is a way that we can look at all the different. Let me see if I click on leagues. Yeah, here we go. If we click on the leagues, instead of the search bar, you just click on stats, teams, leagues, and we see here all the different leagues in all the different countries. But if you look at North America men's hockey, junior US tier one, USHL, and then we look at US junior tier two, which includes NAHL, NHL, and NCDC. So what's the difference between tier one and tier two? Well, number one, tier one USHL, much less teams than tier two. USHL is tuition free, billet free, USA sanction, top level talent, typically younger players than in the North American Hockey League. So North American Hockey League, which is the only USA hockey sanctioned league on the US side, NCDC is non-sanctioned, still considered tier two. Both NHL and NCDC are tuition free, but you will pay for billet fees on NCDC, and I believe you pay for billet fees on in the North American Hockey League. But typically, equipment is free in the North American Hockey League, and I believe in NCDC, it's a mix. Because it's not sanctioned, there's no standard contracts. There is a, they're part of the, let's skip NCDC for now and go to the North American Hockey League. A lot of teams, I think there's 32 teams or so, 6, 15, 23, 32 teams divided into four regions, Central, East, Midwest, and South. And so there's been an expansion of the North American Hockey League in the last couple of years. We do have a new one coming in with Watertown, which is in the north, almost in the Canadian line. This past year, we had expansion from, let's see here, we had the North and the New Hampshire Mountain Kings, and we had Rochester Americans, who's done really, really well. And then we also had Colorado Grit in the South Division that has really struggled, 1041 as an expansion team. New Hampshire struggled a little bit, 1635. But if you look at Rochester Americans, who did a phenomenal job recruiting and tendering and signing players for this year, and impressive organization there. But three new ones this year, another one coming in with Watertown so far. And I'm assuming that Watertown's going to be that's going to be interesting to see which division. I don't know which one they're going to be in yet. I would assume it was going to be in the East, but there's already nine teams there. So there may be some realignments coming in there. So what's the difference? It's just the level of talent is a little bit lower than the USHL, but it's typically an older league in the North American Hockey League versus the USHL. So if we're looking at the one of the stats that you can look at, the NHL team comparison, you have, let me see if there is a average on all teams combined here. No, there's not. But if we're looking at, you're typically seeing the average age ranges from the youngest, which is Danbury, with 18.71 is the youngest average. And Oklahoma Warriors, who has 19.73. What does that mean is Oklahoma has, so let's click on their roster, a lot of older kids, mainly 03s and 04s. And of course, you can have a 03 that has turned 20, but hasn't turned 21 yet. The eligibility is that you cannot be 21 on December 31st of the year and be eligible. So the 03s will be aging out for the next season. And what you see is Oklahoma has a very old roster versus, let's say, Danbury. But if we clicked on USHL and looked at the average age, you would see that being probably, let's go and do that. Let's click on back to USHL tier one, and we'll scroll down and we'll see that the average age goes from the youngest, which is USMTDP, which is 17 average, and the oldest is Cedar Rapids, 18.7. So basically, on average, the oldest league is a year younger in the USHL versus the NHL. So, but it and what you can, if you compare probably the top team, let's say Dubuque, would how would they fare in the USHL? They probably would be competitive. It's a bigger league, is an older league. Let's look at this as well. Average weight in USHL, Lincoln, 183 pounds. Younger players, smaller players, versus North American Hockey League. I haven't looked at this before, but let's look at that as a comparison, because it's fairly consistent. So the 193-94 is the average weight for the top team, and the youngest team or the smallest team is 174. So bigger, older players in the NHL. Very competitive. And what we find within each one of the different regions, typically it's older in the South, bigger in the South, more physical in the South than in the North. So let's look at the second tier two, NCDC. So what's the biggest difference between NCDC and the NHL? Number one is that it's not USA Hockey sanctioned. It is part of the USPHL that has three divisions: USPHL Elite, which is the lowest premier. Both of those are considered tier three. And then the NCDC, which is tuition free, which is considered tier two. Slightly lower level than the North American Hockey League. Younger, not as. There's a lot of fluctuation between the team. If you look at the number of players within the rosters, changes a lot more perhaps in than in the NHL. The other side is that it has three divisions. You have the Atlantic, you have the Mountain, and New England. And the Mountain region is new this year. You have six teams that moved from USPHL Premier, which was pay to play, and is now considered part of the NCDC. So total of 18 teams, and this is growing. You're going to see a lot more NCDC teams coming, and typically what you see is organizations that will have three teams. You have Elite, Premier, and NCDC, and you have players that have the ability to move up and down, but the bottom two are considered pay to play, and it's fairly expensive to play in the USPHL. But those are non-sanctioned in the US. want to put a plug in for the Glenn Heffron's freshman report, which I think is an interesting one. So where, if you compare North American Hockey League, that has a lot of players going D1, NCAA D1 coming out of there. NCDC doesn't have as much, but they do have kids that are coming in young that may not be big enough, old enough, strong enough to play in the NAHL, start, but they're good players. They start in NCDC and then they move up into North American Hockey League, BCHL, or even USHL on a few. So you'll see NCDC tout a lot of collegiate commits on the D3 and even D1 level, but they're really not, when they're committing, they're probably committing out of the NAHL or the USHL or the Canadian juniors. All right, let's move on to the third level. So you have Tier 1 USHL, Tier 2 NCDC and NAHL. Tier 3, there are really three Tier 3 levels within the North America, the U.S. side of the junior system. You have the EHL, you have EHLP, which is the younger development league for EHL, but it's really EHL, NA3HL, and the USPHL. USPHL, as we mentioned, is where the NCDC plays, but they have the Tier 3. So what's the difference between Tier 2 and Tier 3? Tier 3 is pay-to-play. It is not tuition-free. It can be very, very expensive. Out of these three leagues, the only one that is USA Hockey sanctioned that is the NA3HL. EHL was a USA Hockey sanctioned program, broke out maybe 2 years ago. So the only one that is remaining, so there's really only three USA Hockey sanctioned program on the US side, and that is USHL, North American Hockey League, and the NA3HL. Kids are coming out of U16 will go straight into these, or will go also in the from U18 into this. Very few players that are playing in the Tier 3 will go play NCAA D1. The only ones that will do that is the ones that are young that may play a season or so, and then they move up into the Tier 2 or Tier 1 organizations. Frankly, it's frowned upon a little bit. I mean, these are lower skilled leagues. They are tons of them. So if you look at USPHL Elite as an example, there are a total of 6, 12, 18, 22, 28 teams in the Elite. And you have these all over the country, and they're popping up a little bit everywhere, and now also in Canada. Typically, you'll have Elite and Premier, and they can move kids up and down in these areas as well. But it is considered juniors. If we look at the Premier, which has a pretty good level, I mean, that is good hockey. But there is a lot of these teams, 8, 6, that's 14, 20, 27, 36, 43, 48, 55, 61 teams in the USPHL Premier. They're all over the place. And of course, a few of these already moved up. So there was up to 70 at one point. But you have Atlantic, the Florida region. You have Great Lakes, Midwest, West, Midwest East, New England, Northwest, Pacific, and the Southeast. So a lot of teams out here. Big difference between the best and the worst. So if you're looking at Brooklyn Aviators, went 1-42 this year. You have the Cincinnati Cyclones, 3-40. So, you know, look at these situations. There's a lot of them that are coming in, maybe new and struggle. And so if we look at, let's look at average age, if we can. What we'll probably find here is fairly high The oldest one's 19.39. The youngest average is 19.14. So what's the difference there? Well, it's really kids that want to keep on playing past youth hockey that are still have junior eligibility, but are not quite at the NCDC NOL level, that want to continue to play hockey. So it's older, but not as perhaps high levels. Also, another one is that there is a lot of kids from all over the world playing in USPHL, from countries that didn't even know that they had players, perhaps playing. One from Brazil, one from Turkey, South Korea, Israel, Spain, that are playing on some of these teams. So so EHL is an interesting one, because the EHL is kind of a league of destination where kids will move into because they do a great job. They're all kind of in that New England area, lots and lots of D3 schools that are up in that area, and graduate. A lot of these kids will go on and play NCAA D3 when they are done. And they are four divisions. There's a total of 24 teams in four divisions. Very stable, good hockey. But you're rarely going to see anybody coming out of here going in NCAA D1. But they do a good job graduating players into the NCAA D3 level. NA3, so if we click on NA3 or NA3HL, a lot of NAHL teams will have NA3 teams. Danbury, El Paso, let's see who else has it. Lone Star, which is called Texas Brahmas. Let's see who else has. Northeast Generals has it. New Hampshire Mountain Kings has it. You know, about a third of the teams have NA3 affiliation. So those are pay to play, and you'll see kids coming up into the NAHL that get started in the tier three path there as well. Non-sanctioned, you know, mainly U.S. players on this side that comes in and play in this league. So those are the three different levels, tier one, tier two, tier three, and you have fairly easy to see. So let's switch to the more difficult one, which is going to be the Canadian Junior Leagues. So what's the biggest one? So tier one in Canada is called Major Junior Hockey League, which is going to be the OHL, or let's go from west to east, WHL, OHL, and the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Let me see if I can find where are the... they are considered a professional hockey. So therefore, currently, and we're speaking now in April 2024, if you play in the Major Junior Hockey League, then there are, it is considered, you can get paid and you lose your eligibility for playing NCAA. That is probably going to change. It may already have changed. I don't think it's been announced yet, but so if we're looking at WHL, OHL, and Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, is the top leagues. You see a lot of draft picks coming out. Western Hockey League, which is going to be in Canada West, which is going to be all the way to, let's see here, that is going to be Saskatchewan probably, is the, or, I don't know exactly where the line goes between, it is a geographical line between the OHL and the, so it's Manitoba in there as well. And then, so if you are in that area and you want to play, You're restricted somewhat in which province that you're playing in. But these are teams like Brandon Wheat Kings, Edmonton Oil Kings, Kamloops, Red Deer, Regina, top tops. If you're looking at players, let's look at Swift Current, who's the top in the Eastern Conference. And what you'll see is draft picks all over the place. So you see one, two, three, four, five, six on that team. And let's look at the top league in the Saskatoon Blades. One, two, three, four, five draft picks on that team. These are NHL players that are coming out of these teams, for sure. Some of the best players in the world plays in the Tier One Canadian Junior. One, two, three, four on this team. So, you know, every year in the draft, you see players coming out of these leagues. Portland, one, two, three, four out of there. Seven defensemen are draft picks, and three forwards. So seven players in there. Some of the restrictions on here is so they have a draft in the tier one in Canada. There are a lot of younger players that play in this. And let's look at the average age in this. So the average age on the oldest team is 18.59 versus Nol, which is so 2 years older. So it's a lot of younger players playing in the Western. Let's go back to the OHL, which is going to be here in Ontario, Toronto area, in the Great Lakes. If we look at the age for the OHL, also fairly consistent, 18, 18 years of age typically. The oldest one is 19.17, I believe, and the youngest one is 17.8. So it's a younger league in here. So if we're looking at there's three Swedes in the OHL. So let's take a look at those three Swedes to see where they're coming from. You have one draft pick. Let's look at Marcus Semenas. Not familiar with him. From Stockholm, Tyresö, 6'5", 216. Played in the Q the following year. Played in Karlskrona before that in Hockey Gymnasium. So just kind of looking at Wilmer Ulriksson, Guelph Storm. Vancouver Canucks draft pick. He's from SDE in Uppsala. Hugh Gordon played a full season in J20 National, and he looks like he's going to the AHL next year. Third guy, Swedish, is going to be Linus Hemström, and he's playing for Kingston Frontenacs. And from Valbo and Gävle, probably played for Brynäs. National team, and 2 seasons and doing really well. 53.61 games with Kingston Frontenacs. But these guys are what do you get when you're playing in the Tier One in Canada? Is you have 15,000 people going to these games. Of course. Now, let's look at then the Junior A, or what we call Tier Two. They don't call it Tier Two. Instead, you have so Hockey Canada have the CHL, which is Major Junior. Then you have the CJHL, which is Junior A. And it used to be in every province from British Columbia all the way out to Nova Scotia or on the Prince Edward Island. You would have some form of one per province, sort of. And then BCHL broke off from Hockey Canada, so it's now independent. Probably the top of the Junior A leagues is the BCHL. Big thing about these teams is that they do not allow imports from Europe, except they had an exception from Ukraine. But Alberta Junior Hockey League, British Columbia, Manitoba, Saskatchewan has Junior A. And then you have in the central, in the Ontario region, you have the CCHL, NOJHL, and the OJHL. Of those, you have the OJHL and the CCHL are higher than the NOJHL, but these are typically smaller towns. They stay in very local. And these guys graduate. So if we looked at Glenn Heffron's freshman report, you will see that by far BCHL graduates the most NCAA commits every year. AJHL was the number two, but then the top four teams left BCHL in the middle of this AJHL and left in the middle of the year. And most of those, like Brooks Bandits, were the ones who had the highest number of NCAA commits. So they're now part of the BCHL. And lots of rumors about who's going to remain in the AJHL for next year. We hear that some may be moving to the Saskatchewan SJHL League as well. But if you're looking at the typically you'll see a lot of the kids playing Canadian juniors that will go and play US NCAA D1, and you'll see more from BCHL, then less to AJHL, then to SJHL, MJHL, and then probably a mix between OJHL and CCHL will have NCAA commits. But what you'll see is that out of those, you'll see some that will play first year juniors in the OJHL, and then they move into the BCHL. But we'll see, because now you don't have a partnership between the the CJHL with Canadian juniors and in Hockey Canada. And if you go to the BCHL and then you get cut, you have no return to go back to another Junior A team in Hockey Canada. You are no longer eligible. So then the only option you have is to drop down to play in NCDC or North American Hockey League, as an example, which is tough to get in. So lots and lots of restrictions within that area. But my point here is that if you want to play NCAA, great, great hockey in all of these, AJHL, MJHL, SJHL, CCHL, OJHL, very, very good hockey, but probably not, the majority of these that do not, other than BCHL and the AJHL, do not have necessarily a ton of NCAA D1. You'll see a lot of D3 commits coming out of there, and you'll see a lot of them that play a year in those leagues, and then they move up, and then they commit out of the NAHL, the BCHL, or the USHL. And then you have a lot of Junior B leagues within the Hockey Canada. You have the EOJHL, the GOJHL, LJHL, and then on the western side, you have even more. You have the Kootenay, the Victoria. There are tons and tons of these smaller leagues on the west coast, and so on. Another big difference is that there are, even at the tier two equivalent in the US, but junior A, there are fees associated. Some are free to play, but a lot of them have a fee, not as big as tier three in the US, but between 2,500 and 7,500 Canadian, or let's say 2,000 to 5,000 US, to play in these leagues. And there are billet fees in addition to that. But some of the advantages is you talk about a lot of these teams let's look at the Saskatchewan League as an example. A lot of people remember the bus tragedy with Humboldt Broncos, but all of these guys are within the same province. They're probably an hour, 2 hours the most apart. Flim Flon Bombers, which is fairly up north in the middle of nowhere, Estevan Bruins, Notre Dame Hounds. We had a couple of players or people on that from that organization on the podcast before. Of course, Humboldt, but all of these, smaller towns in Canada where the teams are privately owned or community owned, community rink. Lots of people go to these games, and billet is common, and then ride the bus to the team to the games. And it's not like the North American Hockey League where you may have two games or three games on the weekend while you're traveling. You go for one game, very similar to kind of how it is in Sweden. But I think that the experience of playing Canadian juniors is much different than the North American Hockey League. Here, you're part of the community. You are, practicing every day on and off the ice skills, and then you have maybe a midweek and a game, and maybe a Friday or a Saturday game on the weekend. Is kind of how it works there. So, I know that we kind of geeked out a little bit here on following the junior teams in Canada and North America, but I've got a lot of people that have asked the differences between this and that, and I would encourage you to use Elite Prospects and just click on these teams, and you see, especially if you go to the leagues, and you can see and click on each one and look at the different ages. And I think it's important to know, well, what's your goals and what's realistic and what's not realistic. And then you can go into the individual websites, of course, in each one of the leagues as well. And hopefully this has been educational and informative, which is our goal here with the Swedish Junior Hockey Podcast. And we'll catch you the next time.